Would you agree that liberty is something we all cherish? That freedom to decide what we will do, where we will do it, when we will do it, as long as it does not cause harm to others, is a right that we all value and expect to enjoy? I think so. Our society promises that to us. Of course, there are many now in prison that don't have that privilege because they have harmed others. But you're sitting here this morning in full freedom. You're worshiping as you choose. Yet, while you're worshiping freely here this morning, there are millions of citizens of other countries that are forbidden to do that. Ironically, some of those countries claim to support religious freedom. But other countries openly oppose this concept. They oppose all religious activity or limit it to one state-approved denomination or church. To people living in those restrictive countries, freedom to worship as we do is an impossible dream. We don't know how lucky we are when we compare ourselves to them. Since we have this wonderful liberty here in the United States, we're all in complete agreement about this freedom. Or are we? Would you agree that religious liberty should have a unifying influence on all U.S. citizens? After all, we each have the right to accept or reject religion, to choose what to believe or not to believe, to worship or not to worship, in whatever way we think is right. The difficulty with this idea is that not everyone is happy with everyone else enjoying this liberty. Some people have convinced themselves that their rights are more important than other people's rights, and they are happy to sue those others and take them to court to prove their position. Whether this involves creating a wedding cake for a gay couple or attempting to close down a Planned Parenthood clinic, the tensions situations like this create are ripe for exploitation by those with the power to manipulate others. Intentionally or not, some are fostering division rather than unity, and they're using so-called religious liberty to accomplish it. Our current U.S. government leadership is using what they call religious liberty to gain a political advantage, creating divisiveness that threatens the efforts legitimate leaders of religious liberty are making to enable true religious liberty for those who really need it. I believe that authentic religious liberty seeks to ensure that all people have the freedom to choose what religion they prefer or to choose no religion, if that is their preference. Authentic religious liberty seeks to keep the actions of powerful interests, including the government, from influencing or dictating how any person chooses to approach religion in his or her own life. Unfortunately, some of today's leaders are hijacking authentic religious liberty and are attempting to slip a counterfeit into the picture for personal gain. That counterfeit comes in more than one flavor and color. One example that any discerning person can see is granting to faith-based providers of assistance to the need the resources of the federal government. Regardless of how this is rationalized and justified, it is both an obvious effort to buy the support of those who administer those organizations that receive the money, and it is a direct violation of the First Amendment to the Constitution that prohibits such entanglement. So how can you recognize how deceptive their claims are when they say, and listen to this, that to not include faith-based providers in the distribution of these funds would itself be discrimination? And of course, discrimination must be wrong. And to deny that benefit to the people who seemingly cannot find the assistance they need anywhere else but the faith-based provider must be wrong. It is a slippery slope of human perverted logic that threatens to supplant reality with a conjured substitute that serves the purpose of those with personal advantage to gain or to those with a private agenda. So how can you tell the true from the false? In the same way that currency experts prepare to detect counterfeit money by studying the authentic items, you and I can learn the fundamental principles that guide the actions of those who serve others strictly for the benefit of the others. That's the genuine article. Those principles are best exemplified by the words and acts of Christ, who lived in compliance with the laws of God and of Rome. That did not mean conformity to the traditions of the local Jewish spiritual leaders. And it does not mean, for us, that we should accept the assertions of local or national leaders, whether spiritual, business, social, or governmental, just because they say so. It does mean we should be knowledgeable about the laws that apply to our society and circumstances. The priests and rabbis at the time of Christ distorted the original principles given by God to guide mankind. Can you detect anything similar today? I'm not suggesting that everyone should or needs to become a constitutional scholar. But we do have access to excellent advice that can guide us in everyday life, that can explain some of the less talked about laws that deal with our privileges and responsibilities as citizens. The Liberty magazine published by our church serves us well in that area, and this is the only promotion you're going to hear for that. That same magazine also reports on the words and actions of leaders of our country, showing us where their strengths and weaknesses are. Keeping informed about situations and leaders in our country can prepare us to evaluate how honest their statements are and how legitimate their actions are. You and I, all of us, owe it to ourselves and our families to keep alert for evidence of failure to maintain a high level of integrity from our leaders. While we may not be able to change or influence them, we can avoid being deceived by them. Another example of misusing the term religious liberty surfaced during a recent political campaign when a candidate for office promised to repeal a law. Pam, you're going to remember this. A law that protects churches from the divisions that develop when those churches take political positions on candidates. Pam and I were interviewed on the program Valley Viewpoint by our pastor, Roger, on the subject of the Johnson Amendment. And if you heard that, you might remember some of the problems that can occur when that kind of protection's not in place. It was named after the senator who later became President Johnson. Now, why would a candidate for office promise to do that? I often wondered why. Because that promise was made under the pretext of religious liberty. That's how he characterized it. going to free these men in the pulpits to speak their mind. Now, what did the Johnson Amendment actually prohibit? Only the promotion of candidates for office, not issues on those things that we are governed by, the laws, the regulations, and so forth. Only the candidacy of individuals for office. That was all that the Johnson Amendment prohibited. From the pulpit, there was not to be any promotion of these individuals for positions. And so the leaders of the churches still had and have the right to speak to the issues that laws address. No question about that. But they were not allowed and are not allowed to promote individuals for office. Fortunately, cooler heads have kept that from happening yet. But when the crises that are on center stage right now move off, if they ever do, we can expect to hear more about that effort to remove the Johnson Amendment. And it is one of the best protections that churches have, because there's more to it than just the promotion of the individual. When you start promoting a person for office, you are inevitably going to get involved with their funding. And the funding is where a church is prohibited from participating in that activity. These kinds of promotions are divisive because not everybody is going to agree that that one particular person that the one up front is saying they want to have in office is the one that the parishioner in the audience is saying, I want that man. No, I don't want that man. A little bit of head butting. That Johnson Amendment is such a valuable thing for us to have. Yet it's threatened by somebody that would use the term religious liberty to say, I'm going to get rid of it. We're going to free these men to do whatever they want. And there are many in some of the churches that want that amendment gone. One thing that troubles me is that some who claim to be champions of religious liberty seem to have lost focus on true religious liberty violations. This morning during Sabbath school, mention was made of the problems in Muslim worlds, India, and I was just reading another part of the process. I guess it's in China as well. Yes, we have more crackdown there. There are more and more efforts to shut down religious expression that doesn't agree with those in charge. It's serious. 3 years ago, when I was up here talking about this, and that's the last time I had the opportunity, I gave you a bunch of statistics, and I think they just went over the top of our heads. They're almost meaningless when you start talking about millions of people. But keep in mind that those millions of people could be people sitting in other churches around this community. They could be churches in other countries that are real friends of ours or enemies of our government, not of us. And draw the distinction, folks. We need to be more sensitive and aware of the problems the rest of the world is facing. And there are organizations that are committed to helping those people with those kinds of problems. But there are some organizations that used to be interested in doing that that no longer do. I'm thinking in particular of an organization that when I was a teenager was strongly up in the forefront of championing religious liberty. Any of you know what the acronym ACLU stands for? American Civil Liberties Union. And at one time, they were great allies of the Sabbateans, of anybody that wanted to promote religious liberty. There's another organization that came along a bunch of years later called Americans United for Separation of Church and State. A very, very good organization in the early years. Strongly supported separation of church and state, and with it, religious liberty. There are two issues that both of those organizations have espoused recently. Well, more than just recently, for maybe the last 5-10 years, that are in direct conflict with our beliefs. And it is now at the point where we cannot associate ourselves with them, even on questions of religious liberty, because we will be branded with the same tar that paints them because of their support for abortion and gay rights. And that isn't to say that people with gay rights don't have the right to their privileges, just like everybody else does. We don't choose as a church to champion those because they are in violation. The principles by which those are lived are in violation with what we believe the Bible says about our style of life. And so these organizations that once were great in the area of religious liberty no longer support in the same way on true religious liberty issues. The observations that I've made recently are that the efforts to free religion from the problems that we are experiencing is to erase religion from the equation. When you see folks that will stand up and say, "You are in the wrong because you will not make a wedding cake for this gay couple, and you are in the wrong because you say that your religion tells you you can't," is not saying that you have to approve the people. I've got to be careful how I express this. But what I find as a problem is that they are saying you need to get rid of your religion so you won't be in conflict with the rights these people have. You're not allowed to have that kind of religion. That religion is discriminatory. Well, my religion isn't. My religion says God loves us all. And as his children, we need to love him. And that has some very, very complex interactions when it comes to the laws of our country. Not easy ones to answer. There is something that neither the ACLU, the Americans United for Separation of State, or any of the other organizations has really taken on with vigor. There is another target available to them. They seem to shy away from it. One of the most highly and emotionally charged discussions involved today revolves around the role of Muslims in society. I don't know how you feel about it. It's very difficult to separate the emotional response we have in us to acts of violence, acts of persecution, and the people like you and I that sit in rooms like this and worship peacefully. ISIS thoroughly destroyed any sympathy that rational people had for the Muslim world. That was the worst thing that could have happened to the Muslims, as far as the rest of the world is concerned and the opinion we have of them. The problems associated with mass emigrations, they've not been pretty. They've compounded the difficulty to be impartial and objective when discussing this. The result has excited and dismayed many, has created a divide between those who want to protect themselves and their families from harm and those who want to protect the innocent that are survivors from the countries where these problems emanate. That's a pretty difficult conundrum. It is a dilemma, truly. So how do you define these Muslims that are not violent? How do you define them? Are they a potential source of violence because they come from the same country? How did Jesus handle this kind of challenge? Did he condemn all the Jews? No. Did he direct his judgment to those who openly opposed him? I think you can remember his reference to the whited sepulchers and the rest of those things, the cups that were so dirty. How did he feel, though, about the Roman soldiers that put him on the cross? What did he say, folks? Forgive them, for they know not what they do. Jesus Christ gave us an extremely challenging example of religious, I call it liberty or tolerance or understanding. So how does his example fit into your world, into my world today? Today is very different from Palestine in 31 AD. One of the principles that existed before the creation of the world that was still in force when Jesus lived in this world and is still in force today is God's gift to us of the right to choose our destiny. What a marvelous gift that is. And what a monstrous responsibility. Choice. Isn't that a grand word? Jesus gave that privilege to everyone he met. He gave it to his disciples. And one of them made a bad choice. The rest eventually came to understand his purpose in spending years with them, educating and training them. Jesus prepared his disciples to explain to the rest of the world what the choices they make are all about. Their eternal future. Your eternal future. My eternal future. He spent the time necessary to make sure the occupants of this world have adequate information to make informed choices. Religious liberty is all about making the choices we mentioned before. Do I believe? Do I not believe? What do I believe? We have the privilege, the right, and the responsibility to participate in sharing that information to make informed decisions. Informed choices with our world, our friends, our neighbors, our associates in work and recreation, or school for some of you. To enjoy success in that process of sharing this vital, life-saving information, we need to experience daily what we sang about at the beginning of the service. Now I belong to Jesus. Remember what those words said? That's a statement of experience. We will grow spiritually when we daily commit ourselves to him to belong to his family. We will feel the drawing power of the song Patty sang, and you sang with her, how deep the Father's love. I have to admit, there were words in that song that the tears in my eyes made me unable to sing. He loves us so very, very much. And he gave us so very, very much. But we are his. And isn't that marvelous? And every day of our lives, we can bask in the sweetness of the relationship we will sing about in our closing song. the longer I serve him, the sweeter he grows. Can you just anticipate that? How great that is going to be? Experiencing that sweetness. Relishing the choices that got you to the point where you are in his family. As I would put it in the radio world, I'm tuned to his frequency and we're in complete phase. Totally harmonious. No distortion in the audio system. That's what the relationship with God is all about. When we have that relationship with him and we share that love with others, we can surmount those fences that some would put between us, that some would say it's an them and us rather than all of us together. Because when it comes down to the final analysis, we are all standing in God's love before his throne, the judgment throne. Let's make sure we're on the right side of him then.